It's November 10th, 2022. Ward Green here, 1020 hours. 1020 hours, that's interesting. 1020. Sorry, that was probably way too loud initially. Yeah, one of the problems I had on my little tiny tree that was where I got the bar pinched in the tree was, if I'd made it fall in my direction toward my yard, it was going to be hung up in these big trees, at least one or two big trees that I have right there. It was going to get hung up in one of those trees. I'm going to learn a lot from that because I've never... That was the first tree in my yard, anyway, that I've cut down with, maybe ever, probably ever, that I've cut down with at such a fast speed where I just tried to do it maybe too fast. I tried to think, I thought it was so easy, it was a mistake, but nothing bad happened. Fortunately, nothing bad happened. I mean, anyway, so, I mean, it was, except that I did ding my... Both my chainsaw blades got a little bit dinged, you know, significantly dinged. Anyway, one of them much more than the other, though. So, but I mean, the thing is, I've never had a mistake like that happen before, so. You know, it's just every mistake you have. Like, well, the thing is, the more experienced you are, the more you learn from a tiny mistake. Like, every little mistake teaches you a lot if you have experience of, you know, building, designing, you know, whatever. But, you know... Engineering, I want to say engineering, but people might not know what that is. But I mean, engineering sounds like, well, the real engineering is where you make drawings and go through, you know, discussions, and then you build something. Whereas I do engineering like that sometimes, but I don't discuss with anybody other than, you know, whoever's in my life at that time, I guess. But, you know, the engineering that I do is different probably from what some people do. Even though it might be even more advanced in some cases because of my standards, whatever they are, might not be as low, or as they might be higher than some people's. Might be, in some cases, hopefully my standards are never lower than anybody's. That's the idea, right, behind engineering. So you want to be aware that something in the future could, something you build in the future could fail and cause a problem for someone, or for you, or for someone else. So you need to, you know, engineering also has this periodic review element to it, where you have to review what you've done, reassess, and, you know, maintain what you built. With tree cutting, that's true, because the tree will possibly, other trees will grow, or that tree might even grow back if you don't pull the root up, so you still have to maintain that. What you did has to be maintained. I've got a lot of trees on my property, so I'm thinking that's my source of wood for the future, so I don't want it to be all cut down all at once. But I want it to be cut down when the trees are just the right size for wood for burning. That's my that's been my plan from a few years ago. You know, I mean, I just came up with that plan after I cut down my giant tree, which was too big to really easily, you know, burn as logs. And I realized, well, maybe I can, well, since I have so many small trees that are saplings, I can cut them down when they're just the right size, maybe, for logs. I can have the right size logs. Although they are poplar, which means they're not going to burn, you know, they're not going to burn very well. They're too light. Poplar's too light. It's not going to burn. I'll be running down to put more wood on the fire all the time because poplar's so light. That's the drawback of poplar. I've got a lot of old ash trees right now that are a lot, meaning four or five or something like that, that are, it's not really very many, but, and they're not very big. They're just beautiful for they're going to be perfect for burning. But they still produce leaves. It's just that they're so old that the bark is, you know, they look dead. Like, they look dead. The bark is falling off them almost, and, the bark is, you know, it's got big gaps in it and stuff like that. These were trees that we planted when they were fairly young, but they were brought to us for free by somebody who said, you know, every tree will grow, he said. And they did. They didn't all grow to the same extent because they didn't get water, of course. So the only trees that grew were some of the, I think they were more or less wild trees. But maybe one of the trees he gave us was a cherry tree, and I'm not sure where the cherry tree came from, but we've had more than one cherry tree because I guess one spawned the other one or something. We've got, still have one big cherry tree down there at the end of the yard, and I've got another tree. I don't know what type it is, what type of tree it is, but the other ones are poplar. There are a lot of poplars, and there's quite a few. I don't know what they are, actually. Don't really know what they are, but but the hardwoods are denser, and they burn better than, and some of the smell you get from burning maple is phenomenal. It's the most beautiful. I mean, from working with maple, when you cut it, when the saw blade or the drill burns the wood, you get that smell, and it's just exquisite. Sugar maple, though, is what I'm talking about. Sugar maple, that's the one that is so fantastic to burn because of the beautiful smell. But oak will burn really well. I mean, it's as dense as sugar maple, and they're 44 pounds per cubic foot, which is compared to water, which is 62.4 pounds per cubic foot. So they're lighter than water, and that's why they would float. But they're, you see, 44 is not that much below 62.4. So they're actually very dense compared to water. They're very heavy wood. Whereas spruce is about 30, you know, pounds per, it's about half as heavy as water. I think I'm thinking of spruce, or even pine is, they're all about that. The softwoods are more like about 30 pounds, I guess. I think they're sort of comparable to each other. So, I mean, you're thinking more like, you're talking about 30 pounds instead of 44. But you can calculate what the weight of a sheet of plywood is if it's made out of Now, maybe, no, what's the density of oh, we can look it up. I want to know what the density of Douglas fir is, or density of. Those are big trees. Yeah, it's 25. So that's the kind of thing, 26 pounds per cubic foot. See, it's a very, it's a, there's not as much to it for burning. You're not going to get as much burn time from it. Okay, anyway, so let's see what we got here. Let's just see. Let's see how these guys ended up clearing the road here. You know, what did they do? They look like they've done this before. They had a rope attached to that tree and they pulled it in the direction they wanted it to go. But you know what? If they just pulled it across the road, if they could have, they would have had a much shorter delay of traffic. If there was nothing on the other side of the road they wanted to protect. What they did at the across the road more, but anyway, what's that up in the air there? Oh, it's that's the beginning of it. Big. Leaning away from the buildings, which is a good thing. So, I was thinking this morning, one of the things I wanted to talk about was the idea that, the idea of where I lived when I was, or the idea of why we lived in Deep River when I was growing up, when everybody, or a lot of the people anyway, worked at the nuclear plant, in Chalk River, why didn't we live in Deep River? Well, I mean, why didn't we? We did live in Deep River. Why didn't we live in Chalk River, though, which is 5 miles from the plant, inland from the river? And the reason is, of course, that there's, you know, Chalk River was not near enough to the river, you know, to have any of the benefits of the river. So whoever worked at the plant drove 5 miles inland and then drove 5 miles upriver, and they built the town of Deep River, basically 10 miles, but more like maybe about 5 miles as the crow flies from, I'm not sure how far it was from the nuclear plant, but it was upstream so that any nuclear waste that would get into the river would not affect the town, right? So, I mean, that was the idea. It was upstream, and there wasn't going to be any nuclear waste in the river, you know, not of any significance, supposedly, you know, hopefully anyway. But upstream was better. So we lived upstream of the plant on the river where we could carry on, you know, we could swim there and we could do all sorts of things on the river, like people did boating. And of course, it gave us a water supply, you know, for the town and all that. All of those things, you know, being provided by the river was the reason why we lived in Deep River instead of Chalk River, which would have been a much shorter drive, you know, 5 instead of 10 miles to get to work at the nuclear plant, it wasn't a power plant, of course. It should be known that it was just an experimental plant where they were building experimental reactors and using isotopes to do experiments and things like that, you know, using the radioactive material and studying it, doing science. They were doing science there, you know, but part of what they were doing was doing the research also needed for the CANDU reactors, which was Canada's reactor, which stood for Canadian Deuterium Uranium. Deuterium being like hydrogen, but with a neutron instead of just a proton. So it was a proton and a neutron. It was called heavy water when you had 2 deuterium, D2O. D2O instead of H2O. So you had deuterium and oxygen forming heavy water. And heavy water was, instead of hydrogen, it was a proton and a neutron. So the hydrogen was twice as heavy in heavy water. So, I mean, if you took the atomic mass of hydrogen is 1, because it has a proton, the atomic mass of oxygen is 16 in the stable isotope of oxygen. So H2O has an atomic mass of 18 with 2 hydrogen and 1 oxygen, and D2O has an atomic mass of 20, I would guess, right? Because you're adding the 2 neutrons, 1 for each hydrogen. So it's 20 atomic mass. That's the approximate masses of what these things were. But, of course, you know, the actual exact mass depended on the binding energy and so on. Because mass equals energy, according to Einstein's E equals mc squared. So there were slight adjustments due to the binding energies of these things. But about 20 would be the weight of heavy water. So it weighed more. But it wasn't called heavy because it was very heavy. It was just called heavy because it was different from light water, or regular water. And heavy water could stop neutrons much more effectively. So when there were neutrons moving from the radioactive elements in the reactor, neutrons would be often a product of radioactive fission. There were neutrons flying around. So they needed to slow down these neutrons, because you couldn't a neutron that's moving too fast cannot produce a radioactive fission. It can't maintain the chain reaction unless the neutron is moving slow enough. So heavy water slowed down the neutrons, and that's why they used heavy water for cooling the reactors, and they could remove the heavy water when they wanted to, and they didn't have to use enriched uranium to get the fission process going. They could use heavy water to slow down the neutrons by raising the level of heavy water in the reactor, and that would cause the uranium, right, which wasn't enriched, it was just uranium, natural uranium, that uranium could start a chain reaction going, which produced heat. And when they wanted to stop the reaction, they just lower the level of the heavy water. So these are not light water reactors like the U.S. has often used, which depended on enriched uranium. These were just natural uranium heavy water reactors called the CANDU reactors. And that's what they developed in Canada, and that's what they didn't have any CANDU reactor at Chalk River, but they did research at Chalk River that enabled the development of the CANDU reactors. So they had something, you know, something like an experimental version of something that would help them build a CANDU reactor. But they didn't have, I mean, CANDU reactor would be big, much bigger to produce power, whereas the experimental reactors were small. So anyway, that's the explanation of what Deep River was like, what Chalk River was like. None of these reactors were in Deep River, they were in Chalk River, so we live far away, 10 miles away at least. And we had to drive 10 miles to get to the plant, you know. And all the people who visited the visitor center in Chalk River would have you couldn't tour the nuclear plant, but you could go to the visitor center, which was in Chalk, not in Chalk River, but at the plant, at the actual, like 100 yards away or whatever, or less from, or, you know, some distance like that, a very short distance from the experimental nuclear plant, was the visitor center. Maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was a quarter mile away. I don't remember exactly. It was very close to the actual nuclear plant where the visitor center was, and you could go there and they'd explain everything about nuclear power and all that, you know, and all sorts of things. But it was very close, so you were allowed to get close, but they didn't want you inside the nuclear facility, I guess, because then you'd have to wear a badge to monitor your exposure to radioactivity while you were there and so on. And they didn't want you actually going through the gate. You know, there was a gate around, a fence around, a big fence and, you know, and a gate to prevent people going in and out without being monitored at the actual, what do you call the site? At the site itself, or at the nuclear facility, I guess we should call it. It was called CR. It was a nuclear lab. They changed it later, I guess. It was always called CRNL, Chalk River Nuclear Lab, Chalk River Nuclear Labs or Chalk River Nuclear Laboratory. But then Atomic Energy of Canada Limited became Atomic something, you know, Energy Labs or something, right? They changed their name later. But CRNL, I think, always was called Chalk River Nuclear Laboratory because they did a lot of lab experiments there. They had a cyclotron, too. I worked on the instrumentation for the cyclotron. They had a linear accelerator, which would accelerate particles up to a certain speed, and then they had a superconducting cyclotron called TASC. tandem accelerator was the linear, the linear part was a tandem accelerator, and the superconducting cyclotron was part of the name TASC, TASC, tandem accelerator superconducting cyclotron was TASC, and I worked on that task, on the task of developing the character set and programming the EEPROMs that they used to produce the character set to make words display on the instrumentation for task, for the accelerator, right, and cyclotron system. But that was a summer job they gave me to do that, and I did that in one summer. And I remember I modified a Y33 display driver, which needed to be modified for that purpose, I believe. I also modified an EEPROM programmer to I forget what the reason was for that, why I modified that. Oh, they needed to have, one of the reasons was I think they wanted to have more than one voltage for the EEPROMs or something like that, so they could use different EEPROMs or some reason like that. But anyway, I think I had to put in, modify the switch or, you know, or put in a new, add a switch to it so that they could change the like some EEPROMs would be programmed using 5 volts and other ones would use 15 volts as their on and off kind of programming switch to turn them, to put them in program mode. They would need a different voltage that would be either 5 or 15 volts. I think that was the reason why they wanted to change something about that. But so maybe it was an old EEPROM programmer they had, and probably the EEPROMs they wanted to use used a different voltage from the voltage used by the EEPROM programmer that I was changing. That's what I'm thinking now. But without knowing, I'm just, there was something like that, I think, but I'm guessing. But I'm just guessing at this point because it was a long time ago. That was in 81. That was 81, yeah. 1981, the summer of 81. When I met Anne for the first time. Anne is my late wife. And what was I going to say more about or talk about today? I'm trying to think now. There was something, probably there were a few other things that I had in mind about that had nothing to do with anything I've talked about so far. That's why I'm having trouble thinking of what they are. But so it is November 10th, 2022. I like to do these videos. Well, I know I was going to start. I wanted to say, little children, that I'm making these videos so that my own little children, if I have my own children at some point, will be able to follow or learn from what I'm talking about in these videos, and all of which, or some of, well, all of which will contain things that I've learned, but over the years in my own life, and you know, it's really aimed at also anyone who is interested in and who can benefit, you know, from the things that I have learned, and some of which is, you know, quite technical information, even mathematics and things like that. Now, there are mathematicians as you may know, if you watch the video about the man with the brain that I talked about yesterday, that there are really serious mathematicians who, and people who are very gifted in doing math or arithmetic, in the case of that gentleman. But mathematics is very, very detailed. I mean, there's a lot more to mathematics than arithmetic. And it's more than calculus. It's more than algebra. It's more than all of these things. There are matrices, of course. There's matrix algebra and all sorts of things in mathematics that are advanced to the point where a mathematician, it's beyond me. I mean, it's way beyond my capabilities. There's Fourier analysis, another thing which I also, you know, was exposed to, but I'm not really, you know, expert at all in that field of mathematics. But there's Fourier analysis, that's another thing, which is, you know, a way of, it seems to me that Fourier analysis has to do with using waveforms to model shapes of other waveforms, you know, or other curves and so on. So you can break down a curve into a series of these, into a Fourier, a series of simpler waveforms, and generate the more complex shape that you want from these simpler waveforms. That's another branch of, or area, small part of mathematics. There are many, many, many different things within mathematics, and you know, I didn't have an automatic, I wasn't drawn to a lot of the more complex aspects of mathematics to study it, so I didn't get into that. But as an engineer and as a physicist, quite a bit of mathematics was useful. So I did study, you know, a fair bit of, I don't know whether you call it intermediate mathematics or whatever, but it's not the most advanced mathematics that I know. It's not the most advanced mathematics that exists. That is what I know. I just know some pretty, you know, I can get my way around some of the simpler mathematics, and I can do some arithmetic in my head and things like that. I memorized pi to 50 decimal places. I haven't tried reciting it for a while, but 3.14159265358973238462643832795028841971693995100. That's pi to 50 decimal places, although I didn't say it perfectly, but that's pi to 50 decimal places. I just memorized that one time, and I kept maintaining it. Because it's early in the morning, too, my speech is not absolutely fluent. But there were no mistakes in those 50 decimal places of pi. But this man that we saw, he recited pi to something, was it, I forget how many thousand decimal places, the man with the brain. And he didn't do it by memorizing. He did it by, it was a different thing for him. He could see pi as a landscape, and each number for him had shapes. Like the number 810 looked like a kidney bean shape. That was the number 810. And he had a different shape for every number up to some very high number, apparently. I'm not sure how, I forget, I don't remember the exact, how high he went in his unique shape for each number, but he had a unique shape for each number, up as high as, at least as high, and higher than 810. 810 would be. So the number 9 was a very tall number, so when he went to a big city, he felt like he was being surrounded by number nine because these tall buildings would make him feel that way. And the number six was for him a number that was like a, it didn't even exist. It was so small. Whereas all the numbers had a shape. The number one was a very bright number that was just shining and bright. He had a different shape for every number. And when he saw pi as a series of thousands of, you know, thousands of decimal places of pi, he could see the landscape of all these shapes of numbers going through some imaginary landscape in his mind, where he could see every number as he was reciting it. He could see this series of numbers that we know as pi, which I just, you know, of which I just quoted 50 decimal places. But I mean, the me memorizing pi is just a parlor trick. Anybody can do that, you know, if you practice it enough. But I mean, it's useless because I never use pi to more than 3.14159. I mean, at the moment, not even that much, just 3.14. You know, that's all you need for pi. But or in the calculator, you just press the pi button and it comes up with whatever accuracy it has in the calculator for pi, which is probably maybe 16 decimal places or maybe 32. I don't know how accurate these calculators are that you buy for $15, that I get for $15 anyway, that are phenomenal calculators for what we use them for. But if I wanted to do, like when I wanted to do my calculation that was very accurate, I wanted to put some number to the power of 360, you couldn't do that on a little calculator and get any accuracy. You wouldn't be sufficient in accuracy for what I was trying to do. So I used some online calculator, or else either that or an app that you get on your computer, you know, that you can run a calculator app on your computer. But anyway, if you need more accuracy, you can't always do it with a calculator because it's just not accurate enough. You know, if you start multiplying a number by itself and it's a decimal number and you multiply it times itself enough times and you want to be accurate at the end of it, that won't work with a calculator. That's what you need to be aware of. So, but that's usually not something that ever happens. You know, calculators are usually plenty accurate. But, I mean, my understanding of math is just part of my understanding of engineering, which includes electrical, you know, I mean, all kinds of different aspects of... what else? I'm trying to think. Well, you know, being able to make drawings and things like that of structures and three-dimensional objects, drawings of a three-dimensional object, to be able to make a drawing of that is part of engineering. I can do that as well. And so I can design buildings or, I mean, anything, but it's just, it takes a long time and it's prone to many different errors along the way, you know. But anything can be done with engineering and knowing how to do a three-dimensional engineering drawing. I mean, you know, you don't actually have to make a three-dimensional drawing, but nowadays they have a lot of programs that can do that, right? But you can make two-dimensional drawings with different views, right? And with dotted lines to show what part is behind the other part that you can't see, and so on. The parts that can't be seen are shown in dotted lines in behind. So you can make, you know, front view, side view, and top view kind of drawings like that. What are they called? Orthographic projections? Or no, I'm trying to think. What's an orthographic projection? Is that something else? Let's find out what that is. orthogonal projection also, it's called sometimes. I didn't know that, but it makes sense. Just orthogonal just means perpendicular, I believe. Okay, yeah, so that's what it is. It's a way of representing three-dimensional objects, according to Wikipedia, in two dimensions. So it's like, but are they going to show any examples? Well, yeah, here's maybe an example. So this house seen from above looks like that. That's the plan view, right? The top view, looking down at it. It's all, you see the chimney on the front of the house, or whatever part of the house that chimney's on. And then you've got, it's maybe that's not the front of the house. Maybe, yeah, it looks like it. So maybe it's the back of the house, but whatever. And you can see that there's a three-dimensional sort of drawing, or a perspective drawing, rather, not three-dimensional, but it could be a three-dimensional drawing. But you see it's got lines in behind that show that it's not just a three-dimensional representation of the object, but it's showing the lines behind that you can't see from the front also, or from the front of this perspective that's being shown. But you see this one here, here's the side view or the elevation view, looking from this, from the ground level at the house, for example, would be a similar view to that. So you only need three different angles to represent everything that you need to represent. So you've got, you need like a top, an elevation, a plan view or a top view, elevation view, and then you need the, you know, that would be the front view maybe, and then you need one more view, which would be the side view, the side, which we don't, they don't show that here, they just show a bunch of other stuff, but you need one more view, which would be your side view, instead of, so you're seeing it looking this way at the chimney from the side instead of from the front here. I'm not sure where that chimney is now in that drawing. Or maybe from the end. Yeah, maybe we don't have this view. Looks like we have the view from this. We have this view. You can either look from the front of the house or the back for the elevation view, and you could still represent everything you wanted to show on the drawing using dotted lines, for example. But then you'd also want to show the other view would be, see that view there, looking from the front, that's probably this view here, looking this way, but we want to look this way as well. We would need to also have a view from the side, or that's not, or from the other direction, from on, in the elevation. So you could have two elevation views which were perpendicular to each other, plus the plan view or the elevation from above, right? And that's three views would be everything you need to build something or to draw it, and then you could build it after you drew it. So that's the idea. And then what's this matrix representation? Well, they're writing an orthographic projection as a matrix, right? That's interesting. I've never really seen that, but and I don't understand it either, so that's okay. All right. But you can learn all that stuff if you need to. That's the thing. But math is part of engineering, right? But then there's being able to make drawings is another part of it. And nowadays they've got a lot of programs, Blender, for example, to be able to make three-dimensional drawings, or drawings of three-dimensional objects, rather. They're not three-dimensional drawings. But drawings of three-dimensional objects, and also, you know, I think Blender can maybe do, maybe it can do it, but there are CAD/CAM programs that can do orthographic projection from 3D renderings, or vice versa, probably. I think that that's what CAD-CAM programs are used for, but I've never really used anything other than a simple two-dimensional CAD program to do my house plans and things like that. So I don't know that, but, you know, I mean, these are there are things I could get into slowly, you know, gradually get into, but I don't really, you don't really need to do that, I don't think, to be an engineer anyway. You can still do the old-fashioned way, you know, the manual drawing method, or whatever works for you, you know, whatever works for you if you're building things. But to visual, maybe you have a gift in visualizing things without drawing them too. Some things are simpler than others as well. But what other aspects of engineering there would be? There's all different kinds. Of course, there's chemical engineering and things like that, which in a way we're getting into chemical engineering when we cook, in some sense, I guess. There's a lot of chemistry in cooking, in combining things, or not a lot, I shouldn't say a lot, a little bit of chemistry at least. It's not just, you know, emulsifying or mixing things, or, you know, layering things, or it's not just that. It's there's some now, you know, yeah, I'm getting, I tend to pull on my beard. I tend to pull on it. It's just a nervous habit. I can't really stop doing it. I don't know why that is. I need to monitor my beard or something, so I have to keep doing that to make sure that my beard is the way I think it is, or something. There's some reason why I do it. I'm always pulling on my beard. But then eventually I'll start to split the ends of the hairs if I'm, but maybe that was before, when my body wasn't as healthy as it is now. The hairs would split. Eventually I'd split the hairs by twisting them, and so I'd have to cut them off eventually because they all split. Maybe if I'm healthy enough. You know what I did want to talk about? Vitamin K2. I wanted to talk, or what I know what I wanted to do. Yeah. I wanted to explain something. Imagine that you had a vitamin, okay, a vitamin, a very natural thing that would not cause any harm, right? Just imagine this. You have a vitamin that is safe and it cures every infection, okay, known to man. Every infection known to us is cured with this vitamin. Just imagine what that means in terms of every infection. You know, hepatitis, mononucleosis, strep throat, flu, the common cold. There's no virus and no bacterial infection that is immune to this vitamin. Can you imagine that? Okay, imagine there's a vitamin that cures all infections. Now, imagine another vitamin, a different vitamin. And what if someone told you that this other vitamin, not the one that cures all infection, but the other vitamin, imagine someone telling you that this other vitamin is the most powerful vitamin of all vitamins that they've ever seen, including this other one that cures all infections. Can you imagine how powerful that vitamin is? Or what, can you even imagine it? I mean, I'm finding it difficult to imagine myself. How powerful would that other vitamin have to be if it's more powerful than the vitamin that cures all infections? All infections is cured by the one vitamin, but there's another vitamin far more powerful than that vitamin. Can you imagine that? That's the situation I believe that we're in. And with vitamin C as the vitamin that cures all infection, and vitamin K2 as the vitamin that's more powerful than any vitamin I've ever seen or even imagined. That's the situation I believe we're in. That's the reality we're in. That's the reality we live in. Vitamin C is the vitamin that cures all infections, and vitamin K2 is the vitamin that's beyond everything we've ever, anything we've ever seen, and everything we've ever seen, it's more powerful than anything we've ever seen. With a few basic additions, you know, you have to have calcium, you have to have magnesium, you have to have vitamin D, you have to have all the other vitamins too. You can't just say that vitamin K2 is powerful by itself. Vitamin K2 does nothing. Just like by itself, vitamin C does nothing without a physical body to put the vitamin C into. Vitamin C doesn't do anything, you know, without that organism to put it into. But vitamin C works by itself. You don't need other vitamins to use vitamin C. That's the difference. With vitamin K2, you need a lot of other things. I don't know if you need a lot. You need a certain number it's more than just one other thing. You need calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, at least with K2. So it's not like vitamin C where you only need vitamin C. You don't need anything else. Vitamin C and water and some sweetener, possibly because it's so bitter to drink it, but you could just drink it in water with whatever sweetener you choose for that vitamin C to be effective. Whereas vitamin K2, you need calcium, you need magnesium and vitamin D and K2. And then you probably or possibly, I only know what vitamins I take and what vitamin K2 does in me is possibly affected by the other things I eat, including the other supplements I take. So I don't know what other things are really necessary. I do take other vitamins. I mentioned it. I'm not going to mention that right now, but I do take other things and other vitamins and elements like I've mentioned in other places. But just to talk about K2 and vitamin C, vitamin K2 is the most powerful thing I've ever seen. And that's saying something because it's more powerful. I'm considering it more powerful than vitamin C, because once you know about vitamin C, you don't have any more infections. So infections don't even enter into it. But you're still going to die. Even if you don't get infections, you're still going to die. So vitamin K2 is powerful for the reason that it can make you healthier and therefore prolong your life, which vitamin C can't do. So, I mean, that's the short version of it, and that's very inadequate as a description, but that's the way it looks. That's the situation, the reality that we're in. That's what I wanted to talk about today. That one thing, just to explain it in a way that would be hopefully more dramatic and which would be more easily understood by everybody. That was the reason for explaining it that way, for coming up with that idea of how to explain it. So I think we want to do our study before it gets too late here, but that's what I think, little children. So I'm thinking we would like to look at Psalms here. I talked about the chronology of the book of Daniel yesterday too, which I hope was instructive. Not going to be running that terribly slow program right now. Well, I might start it up. I'll start up the VirtualBox. It's already running. Okay, I'll start up my machine. Virtual machine while we're talking here. Hopefully, it's never crashed my computer. Hopefully, it doesn't crash my computer. But it takes about 7 minutes to start Windows XP currently because of the slowness of the emulation on Apple Silicon, as I've talked about. And then I'm going to also investigate how long it takes to start ESORD program in Windows XP, which is, I think it's at least, the shortest I've measured is, I think, it's less than the first time I ever did it, which was 35 minutes to start the program running. That's the program. But there's another program I can't run on that system yet. because it's too slow, and I don't know how I'm going to run that unless I can run. Maybe I can install that other program on some other. Platform, maybe even. Maybe I can run it under Wine, since I'm running Wineskin already. I don't know. Maybe I can run Wine, just meaning Windows. It's not a beverage or anything. So we are at November 10th, which means we're at Psalm 40, right? Yeah, here we go, yeah. It's a short psalm, fairly short. Another psalm of David. Jehovah, our Father in heaven, help us to be like adults with regard to understanding, or help us to become fully grown in understanding. But to be like young children with regard to badness and with regard to our innocence, and to help us to understand your word, the book that we call the Bible, and that has become known as the Bible because of its singular excellence as a book. With it being the most widely published book that anyone is aware of, that has ever existed. In Jesus' name we ask these things. Amen. That was the beginning, the startup chime. Now I'm going to start. What time is it? 11:17, I believe. I can't read it, but let's see. 11:17. Yeah, 11:17, 11:18. Now I'm going to start. Well, no, it's not finished booting. It just booted Windows, but it's not finished. There's another process it has to complete before I can start the program. So, the Psalm 40 to the director, little children of David, a melody. I earnestly hoped in Jehovah, and so he inclined his ear to me and heard my cry for help. He also proceeded to bring me up out of a roaring pit, out of the mire of the sediment. Then he raised up my feet upon a crag. He firmly established my steps. Further, he put in my mouth a new song, praise to our God. Period. Praise to our God. Many will see it and will fear, and they will trust in Jehovah. Happy is the able-bodied man that has put Jehovah as his trust, and that has not turned his face to defiant people, nor to those falling away to lies. Many things you yourself have done, O Jehovah my God, even your wonderful works and your thoughts toward us. There is none to be compared to you. Were I inclined to tell and speak of them, they have become more numerous than I can recount. Sacrifice and offering you did not delight in. These ears of mine you opened up. Burnt offering and sin offering you did not ask for. In view of that, I said, here I have come, in the roll of the book it being written about me, to do your will, O my God. I have delighted. And your law is within my inward parts. I have told the good news of righteousness in the big congregation. Look, my lips I do not restrain. O Jehovah, you yourself know that well. Your righteousness I have not covered over within my heart. Your faithfulness and your salvation I have declared. I have not hidden your loving kindness and your trueness in the big congregation. You yourself, O Jehovah, do not restrain your pity from me. Let your loving kindness and your trueness themselves constantly safeguard me. For calamities encircled me until there was no numbering of them. More errors of mine overtook me than I was able to see. They became more numerous than the hairs of my head, and my own heart left me. Be pleased, O Jehovah, to deliver me. O Jehovah, to my assistance, do make haste. May those be ashamed and abashed altogether who are seeking my soul to sweep it away. May those turn back and be humiliated who are delighting in my calamity. Let those stare in amazement in consequence of their shame who are saying to me, "Aha! Aha!" Let those exult and rejoice in you. All those who are seeking you, let those say constantly, "May Jehovah be magnified." Those who are loving salvation by you, but I am afflicted and poor, Jehovah himself takes account of me. You are my assistance and the provider of escape for me. Oh my God, do not be too late. That was Psalm 40. It was quite refreshing. David continues these expressions that are these unexpected expressions that he gives about the things that he says with regard to his relationship with Jehovah and also the troubles that he has, the calamities. Verse 12, they encircled him until there was no counting. He couldn't count them all. There were so many. That's what happens, right? So, yeah, so that's what can happen. It can happen where you can get, you know, busy with things, or you can be in trouble sometime when you're busy to the point where... What was that noise? Oh, there. It's something in Windows. Yeah, okay. It's something in the virtual machine. Okay. Click on that. Now, this might be ready to start up. Yeah, it looks like it is. I need to click on it. What time is it? 11:23. Oh, 6 minutes went by. Or 5 or 6 minutes. Okay. Let's see what we've got here. I can click on it. Yeah, it worked. It clicked. Okay, so 11:23 is our starting point for this. I'm going to write it down. I want to see how long it takes to boot that program. I need to know that. Let's see. Yeah. Started eSword. 11:23. I just want to make a note there. Okay. So, yeah, there can be confusing times happen to us, and we are with Jehovah's help, we're able to maintain our peace of mind during those times. So in our convention this year, where we learned about how, or the theme of which was pursue peace, right, we can be we can be strengthened to, or encouraged, or we can be more easily enabled to keep our peace of mind when we are in dire trouble, if we know that, or if when we have a lot of things going on that are troubling us, if we know that we are favored by Jehovah, that we are loved by Jehovah, that he loves us, this can change our ability and magnify our ability to remain our peace of mind, to remain at peace in our mind, to retain our peace of mind. So, Jehovah, in verse 2, brought David up out of a roaring pit. So we can be confident that he can do that for us too. When we're in trouble, he can bring us out of that. We can be faithful. That doesn't mean being overconfident. We still have to be alert and, you know, adapt to everything that's happening around us in the right way. I think we're at Isaiah 20 now. Oh, a very short one. Oh, good. It's short. Which, and I love this chapter. That's why I said good. It's, I love it because it talks about Sargon, the king of Assyria. In the year that Tartan came to Ashdod, when Sargon, the king of Assyria, sent him. Tartan is the military commander or representative of some kind. And he proceeded, to war against Ashdod and to capture it. He was a military representative. At that time, Jehovah spoke by the hand of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saying, "Go, and you must loosen the sackcloth from off your hips, and your sandals you should draw from off your feet." And he proceeded to do so, walking about naked and barefoot. And Jehovah went on to say, "Just as my servant Isaiah has walked about naked and barefoot 3 years as a sign and a portent against Egypt and against Ethiopia, so the king of Assyria will lead the body of captives of Egypt and the exiles of Ethiopia, boys and old men." The program started. That was fast. That's amazing. That's incredible. That's impossible. Isn't it? That took 4 minutes. That is 4 minutes. And that, and the first time I did that, it was 35 minutes. I timed it the first time I ran that program. It was 35 minutes. It's 4 minutes. It's 11:27. It's 11:27. Esword. I think it's finished booting, too. Like, I think it's finished because I can see, I can read what I want to read here on the screen. Can I change translation? Let's see. If I can change the translation. Yeah, it changes the translation. I changed from the Bible in Basic English to the Contemporary English version. So I could go to Young's Literal Translation, or I want to find J.P. Green here for a second. There it is. The Literal Version by J.P. Green. Yeah, so I can change between translations instantaneously now, and after 4 minutes, Esword done. It was done booting. It was done startup. So that's the 4 minutes plus 7 minutes to boot Windows. If it might not even take 7 minutes to boot Windows. I didn't time that, did I? Did I time it? No, I didn't time that. It usually took 7 minutes to boot Windows XP, but maybe it'll take less time if this got faster. I don't know why it got faster either. Why did that get faster? Did they write it so it would get faster over time? I'm going to minimize that because it's too bright. But isn't that incredible? That's incredible. It sped up. I don't understand at all. So the king of Assyria will lead the body of captives of Egypt and the exiles of Ethiopia, boys and old men, naked and barefoot, and with buttocks stripped the nakedness of Egypt, and they will certainly be terrified and be ashamed of Ethiopia, their look for hope, and of Egypt, their beauty. And the inhabitant of this coastland will be certain to say in that day, the coastland talking about Ashdod maybe, there is how our looked for hope is, to which we fled for assistance in order to be delivered because of the king of Assyria. And how shall we ourselves escape? I'm very interested in this chapter because it says that Isaiah walked about naked and barefoot for 3 years. And the reason I'm interested in that is because I just bought some new boots, right? So I was naked, or barefoot anyway, for more than 3 years probably. Oh, yeah. Well, I've been wearing sandals for quite a while now. I'd say at least 3 years. But I've been wearing sandals, and I didn't realize that this was a prophetic thing or anything that had anything to do. I wasn't thinking about it that way. I don't think I was at all. No, I wasn't. I didn't think of it. It's not really barefoot, but it's wearing sandals is like barefoot compared to wearing boots. So it does have an application. But the boots I got, I wanted to talk about the boots I got. And this reminded me too. This is the reminder of what I wanted to talk about with the boots. I needed to talk about this because I did it yesterday, something I did yesterday. After I finished the videos yesterday, I went and got my boots again. And I was thinking of ordering some more insoles, which they cost money. The only insoles I need that I want, the only insoles that are any use to order cost $50 each at least. They cost 50 or more dollars, the best ones, which are the ones that I'm interested in. And I think it's the Superfeet that are the ones I'm the most interested in of all of. If you look at the independent reviews, the number one insert are the Superfeet Green. Superfeet Green is the number one insert by the independent reviewers. They're not the cheapest, but they're the best rated insoles by the independent reviews for insoles. That's what it says. Superfeet Green, number one. So I've got those. And what I decided to do is, I'll tell the story of what I did, but you know, we don't have time. We're up to 111. Well, we've got to get John read. But what I did basically was, I'll just announce what I did and then I'll explain it in a later video if I don't have time here. But John, we need to do John chapter 20. It's the second last book in the, or chapter in the book of John, I should say, chapter. So these are the things that happened after Jesus was impaled and died on the cross, or on the stake, actually. It's not the cross. It's called the cross, but that's the conventional, you know, view. But it's a simple cross, which is a stake. On the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the memorial tomb early, while there was still darkness, and she beheld the stone already taken away from the memorial tomb. Therefore, she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple for whom Jesus had affection, John, and she said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the memorial tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple went out and started for the memorial tomb. Peter and John. Yes, the two together began to run, and the other disciple ran ahead of Peter with greater speed and reached the memorial tomb first. And stooping forward, he beheld the bandages lying, yet he did not go in. Then Simon Peter also came following him, and he entered into the memorial tomb, and he viewed the bandages lying, also the cloth that had been upon his head, not lying with the bandages, but separately rolled up in one place. At that time, therefore, the other disciple who had reached the memorial tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. For they did not yet discern the scripture that he must rise from the dead. And so the disciples went back to their homes. Mary, however, kept standing outside near the memorial tomb, weeping. Then, while she was weeping, she stooped forward to look into the memorial tomb. And she viewed two angels in white, sitting one at the head and one at the feet where the body of Jesus had been lying. Two angels. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken my Lord away, and I do not know where they have laid him." After saying these things, she turned back and viewed Jesus standing, but she did not discern it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" She, imagining it was the gardener, said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him off, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus said to her, Mary. Upon turning around, she said to him in Hebrew, Rabboni, which means teacher. Jesus said to her, Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. But be on your way to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father and to my God and your God. Mary Magdalene came and brought the news to the disciples, I have seen the Lord, and that he said these things to her. Therefore, when it was late on that day, the first of the week, and although the doors were locked where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in their midst and said to them, May you have peace. And after he said this, he showed them both his hands and his side. Then the disciples rejoiced at seeing the Lord. Jesus, therefore, said to them again, May you have peace. Just as the Father has sent me forth, I also am sending you. And after he said this, he blew upon them and said to them, Receive Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any persons, they stand forgiven to them. If you retain those of any persons, they stand retained. But Thomas, one of the 12, who's called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. Consequently, the other disciples would say to him, We have seen the Lord. But he said to them, Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and stick my finger into the print of the nails and stick my hand into his side, I certainly will not believe. Well, 8 days later, his disciples were again indoors and Thomas with them. Jesus came, although the doors were locked, and he stood in their midst and said, May you have peace. Next, he said to Thomas, Put your finger here and see my hands and take your hand and stick it into my side and stop being unbelieving, but become believing. In answer, Thomas said to him, My Lord and my God. Jesus said to him, Because you have seen me, have you believed? Happy are those who do not see and yet believe. To be sure, Jesus performed many other signs also before the disciples, which are not written down in this scroll. But these have been written down, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that because of believing, you may have life by means of his name. That was John chapter 20. We finished that. So now I'm going to hopefully cover this little bit of information about the insoles. I ended up trying all my insoles. Here's the other point is I didn't try everything. The secret to success in life is not to try everything, okay? It's to find the logical things, the most logical things that you really believe should be tried, that you are certain you need to try those things because they're the best. They're the things that are the most likely to work. Those are the things you need to try, okay? And the things that are consistent what are the best practices and things like that. Like, what, you don't try things that you know are not going to be good practice, you know, generally. You try things that are good practice. So I didn't try every single insole in every possible combination, partly because it would take too long, but partly because it's just not ethical. You try things that you believe are ethical, right? The most, you know, the things that are consistent with the highest standards, that's what you try. So I tried the best things I could think of. One of them was to put the Danner insoles back in the boots, the original Danner insoles. I did it by taking out, I left the Superfeet green in there, but I took out the other Superfeet that I had on top of those in the Danner boots, and I replaced them with the original Danner insoles, which are very cushiony, beautiful insoles. They were better. The Danner insoles were better. And I had the Danner boots on with the Superfeet green as the base insole, and then I had the Danner insoles on top, and I didn't want to take the boots off. I'm not kidding you. These are leather boots with full grain leather uppers, right? And another time I talked about the tongue as though it was the upper, but the upper is the whole boot. The tongue is the tongue. I got that wrong in an earlier video. But the leather uppers are full grain, and they're not broken in yet. These boots are not broken in yet, and I didn't want to take them off. That's how comfortable they felt. They felt phenomenal, these Danner boots with Superfeet Green and the Danner on top. So then that was the first. Was that the first I did or the second one? I think that might have been the first one I did. I don't know, though. But then I did the Merrell boots. And with the Merrell boots, I found that I could put the original Merrell insole back on top as well. So that I'm standing on the Merrells. You can look in. You can see the Merrell name on it. I just pulled off the three-quarter length inserts that were there. And, off of the Merrells. And then I took the Merrells out and inserted. I didn't even have to use... What did I put in? I've got a note. We've got to end this right now because we're over time. Come on. Oh, I used my Merrell, the old Merrell insoles that I had underneath the new Merrell insoles, and it works perfect. They fit better than before, or just as good anyway. So this is Ward Green, November 10th, 2022, 11:41 hours, saying, I love you. Bye for now. Thanks for watching. Have a great day.